From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, for 77 minutes, amid intense scrutiny of his leadership and connections to Russia, President Trump turns the scrutiny back on the news media, attacking its credibility and its judgment during a remarkable news conference. And The View from Russia, why the government of Vladimir Putin may relish all of this attention, no matter how good or bad. It's Friday, February 17th.
I turn on the TV, open the newspapers, and I see stories of chaos. Chaos. Yet it is the exact opposite. This administration is running like a fine-tuned machine.
In these stories, Trump sees a version of his presidency that he does not like.
I mean, it's story after story after story is bad.
This week, it's the story of his national security advisor, retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. He was forced to resign after reports that he misled Vice President Mike Pence about a phone call with the Russian ambassador to the United States.
The press has become so dishonest that if we don't talk about it, we are doing a tremendous disservice to the American people. Tremendous disservice. We have to talk about it to find out what's going on, because the press honestly is out of control. The level of dishonesty is out of control.
That view of the press brings us and the rest of the media to the White House on Thursday afternoon, where President Trump is standing behind a podium in the East Room.
This press conference was hastily called. Right, there was an hour's notice, at least in terms of when the cable networks broke in to say they were going to do this.
Jim Rutenberg is the media columnist at the Times and a former political reporter.
This was roadblocked across the networks. At least every time I checked, every major network was showing this. And that's a big deal, especially during the day. These are millions of Americans are home with the television on, watching soaps, watching Ellen, watching what have you. This broke in and he is talking to his people.
So the listeners now have like a mental definition that they can use? Roadblocking.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Roadblocking is when the major broadcast networks that still deliver more viewers than cable combined, way more, just across the board give the president their air. So it's the most powerful thing in any president's arsenal, even now in the age of the internet.
So why call this press conference? Why use this power at this precise moment?
So the news is sort of winning in Donald Trump's mind, right? It's breaking through. All the accusations heretofore about fake news cannot stop the inexorable reality that his national security advisor had to resign under pressure. It wasn't the news media, by the way, that made that happen. It was the news media that reported it aggressively. It got out. So in my view, he decides, I'm going to have a giant press conference, regain the leverage, school them. Turn up to 11 the volume on the fake news allegations and use them as props, because he knows they're stuck there sitting in front of him to be schooled.
But Flynn's resignation, that's the first place that reporters in the room go when Trump opens up for questions. They want to know what happened.
Did you fire Mike Flynn?
Mike Flynn is a fine person, and I asked for his resignation. He respectfully gave it. What he did wasn't wrong. What was wrong was the way that other people, including yourselves in this room, were given that information, because that was classified information. It was given illegally. That's the real problem.
I'm really struck by that language, that he doesn't think that Michael Flynn did something wrong. What do we make of the fact that Donald Trump thinks that it's okay to have done what Michael Flynn did?
I think he's always played by his own rules, President Trump, and he's always sort of really gotten away with it. He's won. He won the election playing by his own rules. This really was the first time he had to kind of give in to the way things work in Washington, right? His guy's in trouble. He had to cut him loose. And it's a loss, which again, I think is why he wanted to have this press conference to regain in his mind the upper hand against what he is calling the opposition, the media.
The information coming from those leaks is real, then how can the stories be fake?
No, the reporting is fake.
And if I look, may ask, look, I just want to ask
Jim, you know what it is?
There's an exchange he has with a reporter from CNN, Jim Acosta, with whom the president has sparred many times before.
I just see many, many untruthful things. And I'll tell you what else I see. I see tone, you know, the word tone. The tone is such hatred. I'm really not a bad person, by the way. No, but the tone is such, I do get good ratings, you have to admit that. The tone is such hatred.
When he talks about tone, do you feel a shock of recognition? Not here or at any particular organization, but kind of broadly speaking, the media and this president and this moment.
There is a tone out there. It does get quite heated. You watch CNN sometimes and all the networks except for Fox, and you can notice some, it's like people are lighting their hair on fire behind these desks. That said, you know, there's a counter argument that these are extraordinary times and they're reacting to him.
Let's listen to the next part of the exchange that Jim Acosta of CNN had with President Trump.
It's so important to the public to get an honest press. The public doesn't believe you people anymore. Now, maybe I had something to do with that. I don't know.
I'm going to say that again. Maybe I had something to do with that. I wanted to hit pause on a live news conference when I heard that, because that feels like an incredibly striking concession. He's admitting.
You think?
Like, he's admitting that he played a role. He's saying, I believe I may have played a role in helping to undermine the American media. Why do you think he would be acknowledging that right now?
First of all, he's put a lot of work into it, so he's probably proud of that accomplishment.
Oh, that's a fascinating observation.
Right? It's been a talking point of his throughout the campaign. And then, by the way, he put so much work into it for moments like this.
What do you mean?
When he's in, this is inarguably a crisis moment for any White House. So this is the time when you say, don't believe what you're hearing on the news. That's what we saw playing out.
So this media back and forth that is threading this news conference, it naturally leads to this conversation eventually about Russia. And Trump was asked this really pointed question.
Yes, John.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to get you to clarify, this is a very important point. Can you say definitively that nobody on your campaign had any contacts with the Russians during the campaign? And on the leaks, is it fake news or are these real leaks?
Well, the leaks are real. You're the one that wrote about them and reported them. I mean, the leaks are real. You know what they said. You saw it. And the leaks are absolutely real. The news is fake because so much of the news is fake. So one thing that I felt it was very important to do, and I hope we can correct it, because there's nobody I have more respect for, well, maybe a little bit, but than reporters, than good reporters. It's very important to me, and especially in this position. It's very important. I don't mind bad stories. I can handle a bad story better than anybody, as long as it's true.
So what is he doing here? If the leaks are real, but the reporting on the leaks are fake, it's genuinely confusing to me.
It kind of reminds you when you hear about how Putin does his press strategy, confusion is the name of the game. I mean, come on. It's just directly contradictory. I think I know what he's doing, and what he's doing is on the one hand saying the deep state, you know, he's playing to this kind of conspiracy theory kicking around.
The deep state.
The deep state's out to get me. So this stuff is real.
This is the idea of the intelligence community being kind of a permanent fixture in American government with access to all these secrets.
Yeah, the establishment fighting back, you know, with some Obama and Hillary holdovers. So he has to say the leaks are real, but he doesn't want to acknowledge the news environment that he's there to fight. He's here to overcome this bad news environment. So you're all fake. He wants to have both things. And in the real world, those two things directly contradict each other.
So this was a 90-minute news conference, and the imagery was in some ways just as important as what we're now hearing. Hands were shooting up in the air from reporters. It was a kind of a free-for-all. There wasn't the normal, I will call on this person from the Washington Post or the New York Post. And I wonder at the end of the day if you thought it was an effective one for the president and if you thought it was an effective one, if I can ask this, for the American news media.
I think he did well in the performance. This was a show. And whatever network you were watching, whatever sort of political skew of whatever webpage you were watching, everyone seemed to agree this was his way of kind of coming back and trying to emerge from this horrible, horrible week. It doesn't change reality. He's still stuck with reality. So did it give his people what they needed to stay with him? I'm sure. Did it sway some independents who he's in danger of losing? Potentially. And did it give the media a black eye? Kind of, sort of, but that doesn't change the story for anybody when the thing was over.
Now, they'll take this news conference. I'm actually having a very good time, okay? But they'll take this news conference. Don't forget, that's the way I won. Remember, I used to give you a news conference every time I made a speech, which was like every day. Okay? No, that's how I won. I won with news conference and probably speeches. I certainly didn't win by people listening to you people, that's for sure. But I'm having a good time. Tomorrow they will say, Donald Trump rants and raves at the press. I'm not ranting and raving. I'm just telling you. You know, you're dishonest people. But I'm not ranting and raving. I love this. I'm having a good time doing it. But tomorrow the headlines are going to be Donald Trump rants and raves. I'm not ranting and raving. Go ahead. Should I let him have a little bit more? What do you think, Peter? Peter, should I have let him have a little bit more? Sit down. Sit down. We'll get it.
Today, the New York Times described Trump's news conference as extraordinarily raw and angry. And the Washington Post said of the ranting and raving, he did just that. We'll be right back.
Хочу поздравить американский народ с завершением избирательного цикла.
I'd like to congratulate the American people with the end of the electoral cycle.
On November 9th, the day after the presidential election, Russian President Vladimir Putin stood amid the glittering gold walls and marble columns of the Kremlin and spoke to the United States.
Господина Дональда Трампа с победой на этих выборах.
And I'd also like to congratulate Mr. Donald Trump with his victory in these elections.
He asked for a new, warmer, and closer relationship.
Russia is ready and wants to restore the full-fledged relations with the United States.
Today, 3 months later, that relationship is in danger because of the perception of just how close the two leaders and those around them now are. Hey, Neil, good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good, good. It is evening there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about 10:30 at night.
I called Neil McFarquhar, the Times bureau chief in Moscow. So in the American perception, the Putin administration and government in Russia wanted Donald Trump to win this election. Is that right?
Well, I think they wanted to, but they didn't expect him to. You know, there's accusations of Russian meddling and hacking, et cetera. And we probably will never know to what extent they were able to influence it. But basically, they were expecting another Clinton administration, which they thought would be hostile. So the idea that Trump won after saying, you know, so many nice things about Russia during the campaign, they were just sort of taken aback that they suddenly had what seemed to be a friend in the White House.
The next thing that is absorbed in the American consciousness is that in Russia, the government is celebrating when Donald Trump wins. Is that true? Did that happen?
Yes. I mean, it was limited to certain quarters, although very public quarters.
Дорогие друзья, уважаемые коллеги, 3 минуты назад Хиллари Клинтон признала.
I mean, there was a round of applause in the Duma, the lower house of parliament.
А секунду назад Трамп начал свою речь как избранный президент Соединенных Штатов Америки. С чем я вас всех и поздравляю.
A couple sort of high-profile politicians actually literally broke out the champagne on national television to toast.
Wow.
Поэтому за победу Дональда Трампа, за новую внутреннюю политику в США и за внешнюю политику.
Did they sat there on television with glasses in hand?
With champagne bottle and glasses in hand. And, you know, there were a lot of also political analysts saying behind closed doors, people in the Kremlin were doing exactly the same thing. But it must be said that there is one person in Russia who sets the foreign policy course, and that is President Vladimir Putin. And he publicly was never celebratory. He never sort of, you know, he always maintained the same line, which is that whoever is, you know, president of the United States, we will deal with. But obviously, the government, the Kremlin, controls all the media in Russia, all the main media anyway, and the message there was, this is great, and we're going to get what we want. We're going to get a grand bargain, you know, over Ukraine. We're going to get a grand bargain over Crimea, over Syria. They really expected that they were going to turn the tide and not have the sort of poisonous relationship that they had during the Obama years.
And you're on the phone with these people in Moscow. I mean, can you hear it in their voices, this changed mood, this sense that this is going to be a good time for Russia?
people were so hostile during the Obama administration that they didn't get on the phone with us very much because they always sort of see the New York Times as part of the administration.
For the record, that, of course, is not true.
Yes. But to get back to the question, under the Obama administration, after Russia annexed Crimea and destabilized Ukraine, there was, of course, a series of sanctions. Everybody thought these overarching economic problems were going to go away.
So after the election ends, back here in the United States, we hear that Russia tried to hack the campaign, tried to influence the outcome of the election in its favor towards Trump. How did that go over in Moscow with the Russian government?
Well, you know, the Kremlin always benefits from all this news that sort of puts Russia at center stage because Mr. Putin has been trying to sell them on the idea that sort of Russia is a major power again and Russia is a player and Russia deserves a seat at the table with all the big countries. And so the more the foreign news talks about Russia and the more that Russia is the center of attention, the better it is. He even said it once at a public appearance that it's good that Russia is back in the spotlight. So they kind of ignored, you know, the hacking business and just focused on the fact that Russia was important.
I mean, that's surprising to my ears that all this news, as bad as it sounded here in the United States, was good news to the government there.
You know, they talked about how Trump was going to be a sea change in terms of Russian-American relations. And, you know, I was in Siberia a couple of weeks ago talking to people just about economic conditions there, and one person said to me, not really jokingly, you know, you hear more about Trump on Russian TV than you do about Siberia.
Wow.
And today, there was actually a little demonstration outside the TV headquarters saying, enough with Trump already, you show too much of him on TV.
What are they saying about President Trump on Russian TV?
Well, some doubt has begun to creep in the past couple of weeks. In her first appearance at the UN, Nikki Haley, the new American ambassador to the UN.
I consider it unfortunate that the occasion of my first appearance here is one in which I must condemn the aggressive actions of Russia.
You know, stood up and kind of let rip against Russia for the violence in Ukraine and accusing them of fomenting the violence, etc.
Russia today poses a danger.
Rex Tillerson, the new Secretary of State, who Russia had expected to be sympathetic.
Russia seeks respect and relevance on the global stage. Its recent activities have disregarded America's interests.
And he turns around and says the sanctions are going to stay in place until the peace agreement in Ukraine is put in place. So suddenly they're, you know, the Russians are getting whiplash. And then, you know, Flynn loses his job this week. And so of lately, they've been a little bit uneasy and uncertain about where this is all headed.
Neil, thank you. I know it's late there. I really appreciate it.
Not at all. Anytime.
Here's what else you need to know today. President Trump's top choice to replace Michael Flynn as National Security Advisor, former Navy SEAL Robert Harwood, has turned down the job. And employees of the Environmental Protection Agency are attempting to defeat the confirmation of their potential new boss, Scott Pruitt, who faces a confirmation vote in the Senate today. Pruitt, the Attorney General of Oklahoma, is a longtime critic of the agency. He has sued it at least 14 different times. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. We'll see you back here on Tuesday after the holiday.